The History Today cover story for December is by Jacob Norris, lecturer in Middle East History at the University of Sussex and author of Land of Progress, Palestine in the Age of Colonial Development, published by Oxford University Press. Jacob looks at the real Bethlehem, the city celebrated by Christians as the birthplace of Christ. First of all, Jacob, where exactly is Bethlehem?
Well, Bethlehem is in what is today usually referred to as the West Bank, which is part of the occupied Palestinian territories, which have been under a state of Israeli military occupation since 1967. So effectively in that area of Palestine, which is a state in waiting but still undetermined in its status.
And very close to Jerusalem.
Yeah, it lies about 6 miles to the south of the old city of Jerusalem. But today the kind of sprawl of southern Jerusalem almost extends into Bethlehem itself. So it's just south of Jerusalem.
Now, you pick on three themes in your article, which I think illuminate different aspects of the town, three dimensions to it. The first of which is its Arab-Palestinian identity.
That's correct, yeah. I think one of the points that I've tried to make in the article is that, well, certainly Bethlehem as a town and in terms of its residents have kind of a multifaceted identity. But one of the most salient aspects of that identity is a strong sense of being Palestinian, which relates to a wider sense of an Arab national community, which has been in formation for at least the past 120 years or so.
And this other aspect of it that you pick up on, which is very unusual for the Middle East, is the Roman Catholic identity of Bethlehem as well.
That's right, yeah. So in some ways we should place Bethlehem and its residents within this wider Palestinian and Arab milieu. But at the same time, the town has a number of quite unique features for the region in which it's located. And one of those is a very strong connection, historically speaking, to Catholic Europe. And this is particularly the product of the long-standing Franciscan presence in the town. For a variety of reasons, the Franciscans had more success in Bethlehem in terms of conversions to their denomination than they did anywhere else in the region.
And how do historians explain that?
Well, essentially, historians haven't really explained it because it's been a very understudied topic. So you have, all over the Eastern Mediterranean, you have various, what we might call, broadly speaking, Catholic groups of Christians in a uniate sense, so loosely affiliated to the Roman Catholic Church, but nevertheless with a sort of a locally homegrown indigenous aspect to their denomination. Whereas in Bethlehem, what you find for at least the past 250 years is that the majority of the Christians there have been direct adherents to the Roman Catholic rite. So they are sort of straight Roman Catholics in that sense. So historians have placed a lot of attention on those uniate groups, particularly further north, the Maronites in Lebanon, and the Melkites or Greek Catholics, who historically have been clustered around Aleppo and the surrounding region. But relatively little work, or very little work, has been carried out on the direct Roman Catholics who have been particularly prominent in Bethlehem.
And is this the majority religious group in Bethlehem?
It is in a sense. Today, the demographics have changed somewhat. In Bethlehem itself, there is now a Muslim majority, and that's the product of essentially post-1948 migration to the town. But if we go back into the pre-1948 period, going back at least as early as the sort of the mid-Byzantine era, the majority of Bethlehem has been Christian. And then within that picture, within that Christian picture, since the picture is still somewhat hazy, but since at least the late 1600s, the majority of those Christians appear to have been Roman Catholics. And what this has done is allowed a particularly close series of connections between Bethlehem's residents, Bethlehem's local inhabitants, and actors in Catholic Europe, particularly Italy, and in later centuries, the 18th and 19th centuries, France as well.
And how does that reveal itself
in the migrations that have marked Bethlehem's history over the last two or three centuries?
And how does that show itself in the town?
Well, one of the most prominent ways that that manifests itself is in the establishment of what we might call a souvenir cottage industry in Bethlehem from at least as early as the 1500s, but probably earlier. Bethlehem became the center of production for an artisanal industry in producing religious devotional objects, mostly Christian devotional objects. And as you move into the 16th, 17th, and 18th centuries, as European pilgrimage and tourism to the region, to the Holy Land, becomes more pronounced, this industry is increasingly geared towards Catholic Europe. And what this does, not only does it create this, the industry in Bethlehem itself, but it allows the town's residents to begin selling those products abroad, especially from the mid-19th century onwards, and leads to this remarkable and sort of global array of migrations that take place from the 19th century onwards.
Yeah, because this is one of the most fascinating things about Bethlehem, is you have this little town, as we call it, of course, and yet it has this whole global dimension to it.
Very much so, yeah, very much so. And it's worth pointing out that those migrations in the 19th century are part of a much wider trend across the Eastern Mediterranean, particularly in the Arab provinces of the Ottoman Empire. From usually it's dated to roughly the 1870s onwards, people, particularly Christians, but also Muslims, begin migrating out of the Ottoman Empire in quite large numbers toward the end of the 19th century. And there's a fair amount of, there's an interesting emerging historical literature on this, much of which focuses on the Lebanese, or the Lebanese in today's terms, who tend to dominate that migration, and they tend to be, their migrations tend to be focused across the Atlantic, particularly towards North America. Now, so the Bethlehemites are part of those migrations, but they kind of shed new light on those migrations. On the one hand, because their sort of array of destinations is much more global. They're going across the Indian Ocean through the Suez Canal, as far as the Philippines, Australia, as I've mentioned in the article. They're also clustered around South and Central America in much greater numbers. The other way that the Bethlehem migrations challenge some of the existing literature on this migration is in the fact that actually migration doesn't suddenly begin around the 1860s or 1870s. You can trace it going back much further through time into the 18th century, and I've even uncovered attempts, at least by Bethlehemites, to travel to Rome to sell their religious wares in the 1690s. So we need to see it more as a long-standing history of quite fluid movements and connections, especially with Catholic Europe.
And one of the real manifestations of this with Catholic Europe was the trade in mother of pearl, which has become very much associated with Bethlehem, isn't it?
Very much so, yeah. This is the sort of changing trends in the souvenir industry as you move through the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries. So if you look at the goods being produced, for example, in the early 17th century, they're mostly carved from olive wood, a local raw material, and they tend to have small mother-of-pearl inlays that is most famous in the quite exquisite church models that are produced, models of the Holy Sepulchre and the Church of the Nativity. Yeah,
we've got images of those, and they're really quite extraordinary.
Yeah, and the examples of them can be found all over some of the world's most prominent museums, stately homes, including the British Museum, the Ashmolean in Oxford. They're really all over the world, and that's the sort of high end of that market. And then as you move through into the late 18th and then 19th century, you find the use of mother of pearl becoming more and more pronounced, so that by the early 19th century, you're having entire models and entire works carved solely from mother of pearl. And one of the things that allows this is a new type of mother of pearl shell, which begins to be imported into Bethlehem. So previously the shells were coming from the Red Sea, relatively nearby, and they were much smaller shells, which allowed relatively limited forms of carving and inlay. But then when the larger shells from the Pacific, South Pacific, begin to be imported into Bethlehem, they allow much more detailed and large-scale kind of carvings to take place.
And this trade in souvenirs remains absolutely central to the economy even now, I presume?
Very much so, yeah. I remember the very first time I went to Bethlehem. I was probably expecting a more sort of authentic Palestinian West Bank experience. And I remember getting off the bus and being surrounded by hawkers trying to sell souvenirs, and then the main street that we came in onto was lined with souvenir shops, which at first to me looked quite tacky, and some of them are very tacky. Increasingly, actually, today they're imported from China, but that's another story. But as I spent more and more time in the town and lived there for a while, I began to realise that actually we can't dismiss this as purely recent sort of modern tourism or markets catering to modern tourism. It's something which goes back a long way through Bethlehem's history and is an essential part of the town's economy and has been for hundreds of years. Today, there's particular challenges to that tourism industry in Bethlehem through the Israeli occupation and the restrictions on people's movements and the movement of goods in and out of the town. But it still continues to be the mainstay of the town's economy.
So are tourist numbers still substantial there?
They are substantial, but it very much depends on what type of tourism you're talking about. So one of the striking features of Bethlehem today is the fact that there are many hotels in the town, but the vast majority of them for most of the year seem to be completely empty. So the type of tourism you have now coming into Bethlehem tends to be through Israeli tour companies who sort of bus tourists in for a couple of hours and take them into the manger square, whistle-stop tour of the Church of the Nativity, yeah. And then on the way out they'll stop at one of the large kind of super souvenir stores on the outskirts of the town, which are actually located just near where the separation wall is, and they have a sort of usually a pre-existing deal with the owners of those stores. And what that means is that many of, not just the hotels that people are staying overnight, but many of the older producers of these religious devotional objects simply going out of business because these tourists aren't visiting. They're just coming in a couple of hours and then going to one of the big sort of, if you like, out-of-town superstores. So the sort of the historic centre of the town is relatively depressed economically at the present time.
Oh, well, thank you, Jacob, for that very illuminating talk and a tremendous article as well, The Real Bethlehem. It's our cover story in December. So thank you very much, Jacob.
Thank you.